Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Well, there's a big air of expectation in New York tonight as to whether or not the former US President Donald Trump might be indicted by a grand jury over the issue of a hush money payment made to porn star Stormy Daniels shortly before Election Day in the 2016 presidential campaign. Donald Trump stated publicly last weekend that he expects to be indicted, that is, arrested, as soon as today. Well, yesterday, the New York Police Department began installing steel barricades outside the Manhattan Central Criminal Court. And if he's arrested, it would be the first time that a former US president has faced criminal charges, setting up an unprecedented legal battle that will reverberate across the 24 presidential campaign. New Donald Trump's critics and allies alike say an indictment could bolster his standing with the Republican grassroots voters who will select the party's nominee for president in 2024, even if it could turn off voters in the general election, although others see that an arrest might just be the first domino to fall, with the former president facing a slew of other legal hurdles as well. To talk about this, as well as more worrying news of further warnings from the IPCC about the latest figures on catastrophic climate change, joining us for Nightlife News Breakdown is Michael Williams, editor of The Monthly. Michael, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Pleasure to be here.
You've been closely watching these developments in New York. We don't know whether he's been arrested yet, but if he is, it won't be long, will it?
Look, it's just after 8 a.m. New York time at the moment, and it's one of those kind of fascinating news stories where there are vested interests in leaking it ahead of time. Yeah. You know, Donald Trump himself, as you said, went to town calling on his supporters to rally around and protest his imminent arrest. Now, whether he knows something that no one else knows, the nature of a grand jury is that most of it is kept completely confidential right up until the moment. There have been some other leaks out of the New York DA's office that suggest that an arrest is imminent. But it's really hard to tell what's real and what's a beat up just to try and prove relevance.
Mm. I know. It does seem informed opinion say, look, at 100% this is going to happen.
Yeah, look, it. The current district attorney in New York has been very clear. He's a guy called Alvin Bragg, and he's been very clear that an indictment is forthcoming. The focus is, as you said, the hush money paid to Stormy Daniels just ahead of the last election. There's no question that there are various legal challenges coming Trump's way. The interesting thing is whether they have legs and whether they're enough to galvanize his base to kind of come out and support him once again.
Mm. That's right. There are also other legal challenges facing him, aren't there, including possible criminal charges by the US Justice Department over those documents found at his home at Mar-a-Lago and so on. But if he is arrested, I mean, in the normal course of events, if you are arrested on indictment, you are picked up at your house, handcuffed, and taken down to a courthouse and charged.
Philip, like you, I'm a student of law and order. I've seen enough episodes. I know a perp walk when I see one. Mm. I think it's extremely unlikely. I mean, the thing is that the law enforcement people in New York will be liaising with the Secret Service. You know, this is a former president we're talking about. And it seems unlikely in the extreme to me that he'll be cuffed and walked through the streets to face his arrest. That said, even if he goes quietly, even if he goes himself, he'll still have to be fingerprinted. There'll still be kind of those classic arrangements. And you have to imagine that every paparazzo on the east coast of the US is gathered there hoping to get a photo of the moment.
Hmm. Anyway, we'll keep our eyes on it. If it does happen, as I say, if it does happen, it's likely to happen in the next hour or so, actually.
One to watch out for, definitely.
Yeah, indeed. Look, more worrying, perhaps more than any other news, this landmark UN report on climate change, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's latest findings, approved by 195 member states on Friday. I know we say we've heard all this before, but this time it's serious in the most grievous way, isn't it?
Look, it's terrifying news that comes upon terrifying news after terrifying news. It's easy to hear this kind of announcement and feel like the international climate scientists are a bit like the bad university student trying to finish an essay and renaming the file on the computer, final draft, final, final draft, final, final, final draft. You know, that idea that it always is the kind of 11th hour. But what is clear is that the prognosis about warming is only getting worse, that even though climate scientists for many years now have had to kind of walk that line between hope and despair, it feels like a kind of crucial moment for the international political community, scientific community, business community to band together and recognise that changes need to happen, because we are at the point of no return.
Well, I mean, that is the issue, isn't it, that really, that we're going to have to talk about adaptation rather than defeating this thing, aren't we?
Look, you would have thought so. And on the domestic front, you know, it comes at a time when 9 months into their term of government, the Albanese government is kind of facing a lot of challenges not of their making, whether they're economic, whether they're to do with defence contracts, or whether they're to do with climate change. But it is clear that questions like the opening of new fossil fuel projects aren't abstract ones anymore. The IPCC report makes it clear that that just shouldn't be an option. It shouldn't be on the table. And yet the gulf between the Albanese government's rhetoric on zero emissions and the policy levers that they're prepared to pull seems pretty vast at this point.
Yes, this is the Greens leader, Adam Band. He says the federal government needs to back the IPCC call.
Because at the moment, Labor is giving the United Nations the middle finger by pressing on with opening coal and gas mines, despite the very clear warning that this will lead to climate collapse.
Yeah, although, as Adam Bandt knows full well, that there's got to be some way to transition out of this, and we are going to need gas in the meantime. Well, I mean, it's all very well to be wishing it away, but you can't, can you?
Well, I think the question is about new gas projects. You know, Chris Bowen used the language of responsibility, saying it was irresponsible to start placing bans on traditional energy supply. Mm. But I think, you know, the Greens' position isn't necessarily about immediate eradication, but it is about a stop to kind of green-lighting new projects. And until the Albanese government show a willingness to do that, it's hard to see how as the world's third biggest fossil fuel exporter and 14th biggest national emitter, Australia needs to do its part, and these new projects, you know, don't match that.
Yes, we shall see. Now you're in Melbourne, Michael. We talked a bit about this last night. This weekend display of Nazi insignias and salutes on the steps of Parliament. The Victorian Premier has got stuck into it, saying they'll ban this, and the Victorian opposition leader John Pesutto plans to expel a Victorian Liberal MP, Moira Deeming, who joined the rally attended by neo-Nazis. Mr Dutton, the opposition leader, says he condemns any glorification of Nazism and pointed to his ministerial record as proof that he encouraged prosecuting those guilty of propagating hate. Victorian Premier Dan Andrews had this to say after being asked about his thoughts about what happened on Saturday.
What I would say is this. That rally was a nasty, hateful event long before anyone offered up the Nazi salute. And you might say that the Liberal Party, you know, are increasingly becoming a nasty, hateful little rabble. Why would you make it harder for trans Victorians? You know, the notion that people are choosing this for fun, like, it's so offensive, it's so cruel, it's not mainstream thinking, it's not the big-heartedness that our state is so well known for. Like, it's just wrong. It's wrong. Trans people in our state have a self-harm and suicide rate that is 15 times greater than the average. What do these people want? They want it to be 20 times? 30 times higher? As I said, that event And what a disgrace on the steps of our parliament, of all places, right? That event was a nasty, hateful gathering long before anybody used the Nazi salute. Mr. Bisutto and the Liberal Party can explain why some forms of hate are okay and other forms aren't. I think all hate is wrong. Simple as that.
That's Dan Andrews, the Victorian Premier. What's Melbourne making of all this, Michael, given that you're the official spokesman for Melbourne?
As the official spokesperson for Melbourne. Look, I've got to say it, Philip, and I don't say it very often, and I would often qualify it in different ways, but listening to Dan Andrews then, I couldn't be prouder that he's our Premier. I mean, that was a message of such a profound kind of clarity and humanity. I think the point that the presence of Nazis at the rally is self-evidently repellent, but it, you know, it is the kind of icing on the cake of something that's pretty awful from the ground up. You know, to import an anti-trans activist like Kelly J. Keane out of the UK for the purposes of protest is to import some of the most toxic, some of the most kind of hate-filled rhetoric happening in public discourse anywhere in the world into Australia. There's no relevance to that in our community. You know, the absolute cruelty of the voices of the speeches that were on display should have made the rally something to be condemned right from the outset. The presence of Nazis merely serves to underline the kind of motivation behind this thing.
Yes, there was predictably, perhaps in federal parliament today, hay attempting to be made. Labor tried to embarrass the opposition leader Peter Dutton about it. This is Attorney General Mark Dreyfus asking Peter Dutton whether he was afraid to condemn it.
But what have we had from those opposite, in particular their leader? Complete silence, Mr. Speaker. We all know that bigotry and hatred breed in silence.
Yes, well, of course, Mr. Dutton was having none of that.
The treatment today of people of the Jewish faith is an abomination, and it is equally condemned in that it would be used for political purposes in this place as a very, very poor reflection on you, if I might say.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough too, isn't it? I mean, attempting to box people up over this, Michael, do you think?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the Liberal Party very happily put Catherine Deves forward as a candidate at the last election. You know, in Victoria, Pursuta, the opposition leader, has come out and made the right noises about expelling their MP who took part in the rally, Moira Deeming, and, you know, they're the right noises to make. But, you know, dog whistling cuts both ways, and I think the suggestion that it's being politicised is an easy one to make by a party that doesn't seem to have its own house in order on it.
Okay. All right, Michael, good to talk. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Speak soon.
Yes, Michael Williams, the editor of The Monthly on Nightlife.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.